Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Reed Wallach of Sports Illustrated will join us. And we will discuss some NBA free agency, some college football. Reed is a very sharp college football handicapper, so excited to get his thoughts. We kind of bide our time, count down the days until football starts, and we get ready, try to get you ready for the season and be prepared once it starts. But I will start with free agency. Last time we talked was Sunday into Monday, and free agency was starting to take shape. Looked like Paul George was definitely leaving the Clippers and might go to the Sixers. That, in fact, happened. And just a couple of the other moves. Klay Thompson goes to the Mavs. I don't know that he moves the needle. I don't think he does at this stage of his career, but it is, you know, a little sad to just see him go. Just what a great run he had with the Warriors. What a combination that was with him and Curry. I think he was kind of the just from a basketball standpoint, those years they had Durant, he kind of took a back seat, and you know that dynamic of Curry and Klay was a little bit compromised. But just a great defender, great 3-point shooter. The injuries, the ACLs obviously took their toll, and he's just no longer the defender. He can still shoot it here and there, but he's certainly a player on the decline. So I don't know that he moves the needle. But the one, and I'll get to the big picture stuff here, the one that kind of flies under the radar, the Nuggets losing Caldwell Pope. This is a summer after, hey, they won the championship a year ago. Then they lose Bruce Brown, and they lose Jeff Green. Now they lose Pope. They're losing these guys, and they're not getting anything back in the door, and they're losing it because of money. And, hey, they don't want to match the salary. They don't want to pay the luxury tax. I know Jokic is detached from this stuff, and he's in wherever he is riding horses and stuff and just relaxing, and he doesn't take this stuff too seriously. I wonder if he starts to get annoyed. Like, wait a second. He's quietly up to around 30. I mean, what? He was the 2014 draft, so I think he's right around 30 when the season starts. I mean, it's not like he has forever. It's not like he has 7-8 years left of being the best player or, you know, being in his prime. He's probably closer to like 2 or 3 years, and you're punting away because you still have Murray, you still have Gordon, you still have Porter Jr., who's an up-and-down player, but this definitely knocks them down a peg. So that's, I thought, a subtle move, and maybe OKC heads in, well, at least according to the odds, OKC heads into the next season here with shorter odds and maybe a better chance to come out of the West. OKC doesn't have the star. I mean, Shai Gilgeous is a tremendous player. He's not the star Jokic is, but much deeper team for OKC. You wonder if Jokic starts to get frustrated with this lack of spending and the lack of improving the team, because it's just a lot of talent, small players, but Caldwell Pope is a very valuable role player, and just players going out the door and no players coming back in the door. It's just not the recipe for Denver. So that's an interesting one. But the big one, and burying the needle here a little bit, Paul George goes to Philly. And it clearly catapults them to at least on that Knicks level. I think it puts them above the Bucks. I don't think you can put anybody above or on the same level as the Celtics. But I think the big picture here, this is good for the league because it creates some rivalries here. Celtics, Sixers, Knicks. It really strengthens the East. The East got better the last couple of weeks with the Knicks getting Bridges, the Sixers getting George. And now you have a little competitiveness where, look, a few months ago and then this playoffs with Boston, it was just the JV circuit and they were the best team and they just rolled to the finals. And maybe they'll still go to the finals, but at least they're going to have to, as long as Embiid's healthy and George, as long as these teams stay healthy, they're going to have to fight for it. They're going to play in game sixes, game sevens. I mean, the odds have adjusted 8-1 to win it all. It's hard with Embiid's lack of health, and now he's 30. And one thing, you know, people always bring up the lack of health like I do. Embiid has not played well in these big games. Forget being healthy. He has just missed shots. He's turned the ball over. He gets tired. So he has come up short even when he's been on the court. And then you throw in, he's always dealing with a face or a knee or an elbow. It's always something. But on the court, the best version of this team, Embiid, George, Maxey, that's a really good trio. And they have the flexibility with the Clippers picks they got in the Harden trade. And I'll get to the Clippers here in a second, because what an absolute disaster it is for the Clippers. Now, first of all, you take George. Now you make the picks even more valuable. You devalue the Clippers. Now you can do something at the deadline where, hey, you got some maneuverability where you can add another piece. Now, I know you have to make the money work and all that, but Philly's in really good shape. Embiid's never played in the conference finals. It's been since Allen Iverson since they played in the conference finals, which is just insane. I mean, it's almost like the Cowboys streak of not making the conference championship where – okay, it's hard to win a championship. Not everyone can win a championship. It's, you know, only one team wins it. It's hard to get to the finals. But most teams, when you go 25 years, most teams in most leagues at least get to like a conference finals, a Final Four. Sixers are not one of those teams. So this gives them a good chance to break through. Not a lock, because look, Knicks, Celtics, Sixers, one of those teams is not getting out of the second round. You can only have only two of those guys can play in the conference championship, the conference finals. So it's not like this puts makes them a lock to get to a conference finals, but it obviously gives them a good chance. It gives them a chance to win a title. I mean, if everything goes right, they could win the title. From a betting aspect, would I bet it 8-1? Probably not. Probably not. It's probably properly adjusted. The thing with these big moves, you got to bet it before it gets ahead of the number. You got to get ahead of the news, because once and I don't know what they were before, but I'm sure it moved significantly, $2 or $3, where you could have gotten them 11, 12 to 1, something like that, 10 to 1. Now you're paying for the move, so you're not getting a bargain. The one I was looking at, if you want to just, hey, if you have a free bet, and again, you're talking about tying up money for a year. OKC to play Philly in the finals next year is like 25 to 1 at DraftKings. You just parlay the conference winners. That's not terrible, because like I said, I think Denver took a step back, and I think Philly obviously takes a step forward. Who knows? Boston championship hangover, Porzingis hurt. Do they just take the foot off the gas a little bit next year? We'll see. But league got better. League got more exciting, more interesting. The rivalries, the competitiveness. This is a good move. Overpay for sure. 4 years, a lot of money. He's an older player, 34. He's had his issues come in big games, but you're going to put him as like second banana, third banana. They could still use a defender, but in those years at the end, they're not going to be pretty. But Embiid was 30. You had to do it. You absolutely had to do it. It was a no-brainer. And why the Clippers just said, you know what, we don't want to go to a fourth year, which that part I understand, but you can't let him go for nothing, because now you're the Clippers, and the worst thing you can be, you always say the worst thing you can be is in the middle. The worst thing you can be is in the middle without your picks. It's almost like the Nets situation with Bridges before they made that move and they chose their direction. The Clippers now, this is one of the all-time catastrophes of a trade. This group got together in 2019 with the Kawhi signing and Paul George trade, and Kawhi said, hey, I'll come there, but you got to trade all your stuff for Paul George, which he doesn't get enough criticism for. This group has won 3 playoff series. They haven't won a playoff series since 2021. They didn't make a finals. They made 1 conference finals. They had the choke job in the bubble. This is now a disaster for the Clippers, just an absolute disaster. And from the moment those two guys got together, they acted like they were above the league, and they acted like they won a million championships together. I know Kawhi had some credibility and had some history coming from, you know, the Raptors where he won and the Spurs he had won and been a finals MVP. But they just acted like they were above the league the whole time. That first year, they was just load managed. They really invented, and the Spurs invented the load managed, but they really took the load managed to an offensive level, and everyone always gave them the benefit of the doubt. And now this group has been broken up, and they have won nothing. They will win nothing. And you're stuck here with Kawhi and with Harden. Your best player is always hurt, never plays. And your second best player is Harden, and he's diminished. So I think the Clippers are going to have to, at some point, look in the mirror and say, hey, what can we get for Kawhi? I know it's going to be 40, 50 cents on the dollar. Who's going to give up a godfather offer for a guy that's always hurt? Probably nobody. But I think at some point you have to, even if it's, hey, let's get him healthy. Let's try to get him healthy, keep him healthy for a few months. And once he's healthy, then maybe we can sell high on him and get 2 or 3 picks. Because you give up all your picks. You give up 5 picks and 2 swaps for Paul George and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And then you gave up 2 picks for Harden, and now those picks go to Philly. So you don't have a lot of you still owe stuff to OKC for that trade. And now you owe stuff in the future for the Harden trade, and you'll have a very good team. And if Kawhi, let me rephrase it, when Kawhi gets hurt, you're going to possibly be in the lottery. So the Clippers, I think, are looking at a rebuild. They don't have the over under for wins up yet. To me, that is the big betting implication of all this. Once the season win totals come up, I love the Clippers under. I just think Kawhi is either going to get hurt or traded. Harden is what he is, and this team is a mess right now. So some interesting moves. Again, not the bombshells of like 5 years ago when it was Durant and Kyrie and Kawhi and Paul George and all those guys trade, and we're all in their prime too and change teams. But still an interesting deadline or an interesting free agency period. Some movement, Denver coming back to the pack, the East getting stronger. So the league, I think, got more interesting the past few days. So we will see what Reed Wallach thinks of all this. We'll get his thoughts on the NBA, college football. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him at Sports Illustrated, the Early Read podcast. He's one of the few people who has a podcast as cleverly titled as I do. It is Reed Wallach. He's back. Reed, what's up, man? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, that's a big shout out to my mom. She's the brains behind the Early Read title. So a big shout out to my mom. But yeah, happy to be here. It's an interesting time in the sports calendar. A lot of, I feel, like abstract kind of, right? Like you gotta talk like big picture, you got like off-season conversation, I guess like baseball, it's like dog days. So it's an interesting time of year to talk some sports, Ben. So I'm happy to come on.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. I mean, you know this from podcasts like baseball, it's day to day, but when you do it, it's hard to just do a baseball podcast unless you're doing awards, big picture stuff. You know, games just ages so quickly. So I'd love to talk more about like games daily. It just doesn't have the shelf life. But NBA offseason is in full swing. We'll talk some college football, but let me phrase it this way. Did anything that happened in the last few days, Paul George, any of these other moves, did anything that happened trigger a bet for you?
Not necessarily, and I maybe one as I get through this whole spiel, but I think looking at the NBA title picture now and where the league is going with this second apron, it might not be worth it for you to tie up so much of your bankroll in like an NBA title future. I just think there might be better ways for you to deploy your capital. If you look at the title odds now, of course, you have Boston at the top, you have the Thunder, you have all these teams now sitting there, but they're all clumped together. Obviously, Boston is out in front, but you know, OKC 750, that's going to pay out basically a year from now, right? Like what, like 50 weeks from now? Like, is it really worth it to get in now on that where there's probably better ways to use your money? So in terms of triggering a bet, I do think that OKC is probably closer to Boston than they are to the Sixers, the Nuggets, the Knicks, and the Mavericks, if that makes sense. Like, I think that there's a bit of a separation after the moves they've made. But in terms of like a bet itself, maybe nothing right now, but I do think it's worth knowing that I think OKC is real, like they've made the moves that were necessary to me to really take a step forward and be treated as a serious title contender.
What does the George move do for Philly in your mind? Close to Boston, even with the Knicks, slightly ahead of the Knicks. I know a lot of it is dependent on Embiid's health, Embiid's knee. And to your point, man, okay, it might be a good team if everything breaks well, but you're going to sit here in July and bet on Embiid's knees to hold up for 11 months. I'm not doing that. But what's your just takeaway, George, to the Sixers?
I really like the move. I think the Sixers, this is as good as you could have asked for, in my opinion. Now, look, is the contract going to age well? A 4-year deal like that for a guy who's, I believe, going to be, he's 34 now, maybe 35 by the start of the season. He's going to be 39 when the contract's over. Maybe not, but I think that this was a move for the next year or two. And I personally would put the Sixers above the Knicks very slightly. I think the Knicks moving in on Mikal Bridges was a move to try and compete with Boston. And I think that they may have overlooked the Sixers and even the Bucks with, you know, some of the size they have with Embiid and Giannis. I think they may have overlooked those teams in how they're constructing their roster because they lost Isaiah Hartenstein. Their only usable big man right now is Mitchell Robinson, who I don't, you know, you want to talk about durability and talent, really. I don't know if he necessarily compares. So the Knicks, there's a hole in that roster still, and they are running out quickly of moves to make and, you know, usable big men in the free agency market. So the Knicks, to me, we'll see how it works out. They're gonna win a lot of games, but I don't really consider them like a true title contender.
Yep, I agree with just about everything you said. I think everything you said. And for me, the bet is, and it's not up yet, so it's hard to give out bets that don't exist. I'm fascinated. I'm curious what you think. What number do you think they hang on the Clippers over under for season wins?
This is just pure, I mean, no prep. So I'm going to guess we're assuming Kawhi is fully healthy by game one.
Huh.
I'll say 44 and a half. What do
Oh
you think?
wow, I would think around 41, just because you're gonna have to build in the fact that Kawhi's probably gonna get hurt at some point, or Kawhi, who knows, might be traded. You gotta at least think about it. Where hey, if you're the Clippers, can we get him healthy for a couple months, then sell high, then recoup some of our picks? I know they're going into this new building and they wanna have some marketability, but to me, the Clippers, I'm gonna be looking to pound that under because I just don't know what they are, what direction can Kawhi stay healthy? And Kawhi is Kawhi, and the answer is usually no. And I think there's at least a 10-20% chance they trade Kawhi. So to me, I'm gonna be
I think that, by the
fascinated.
way, I think that's totally in the realm of possibility, especially with the deal they do with Harden. I think it's totally possible that Kawhi, maybe it's after next season, like a year from now, we're
Yeah.
talking about that. But I think the Clippers are signaling, and I think, you know, we're talking second apron and all these teams now and like the parity. Some of these teams are just like kind of crapping out. The Warriors are in a really tough spot now, and they just kind of let Klay walk. Like, some of these teams are almost, I don't want to say punting with some of their stars, but just kind of putting their hands in the air, like, hey, we kind of got caught in the middle of this, and we need to kind of reset the books and maybe take a gap year, which it's usually that doesn't work. But with some of these teams and where they're positioned, you kind of have to.
Yeah, and Denver's one. I think you alluded to him. I don't know if you mentioned him specifically, but last year they lose Bruce Brown and they lose Jeff Green. Now they lose Caldwell Pope. It's like that's a lot of talent going out the door, out the window. It's not Murray or Jokic, but hey, I wonder if Jokic starts to get annoyed. Like, wait a second, I'm the best player in the world. I've won three MVPs. I probably should have won four. I'm 30. It's not like I have another 5, 10 years left. I've only got maybe 2 or 3 years left in my absolute prime. Now he'll age well, but you wonder if Jokic gets annoyed. And let me ask you, where do you think this leaves the Nuggets? Still title contenders, obviously, but not tier one title contenders, I would think, right?
I think the Thunder have leapfrogged the Nuggets in terms of like title picture. I would still put the Nuggets though ahead of the Mavericks, and I mean, I know the Timberwolves just beat them in the playoffs, but I would still probably trust the Nuggets to go the distance relative to the Timberwolves because I do think Mike Malone's a good coach. They still have the best player in the league, and there's enough young talent on Denver that maybe they don't have like that high-end upside that five with Caldwell Pope had last year, but there's still enough where a little bumping development. If Christian Braun takes the next step, if Peyton Watson can be usable in the playoffs, Julian Schrother, those guys give me some hope that they could still be in the title picture.
Yeah, and just an interesting situation where they looked a player short this year. Now you're gonna lose Caldwell Pope, who's a perfect playoff guy. I get he got a lot of money, he's getting up there in age, but you gotta replace it. You gotta have the talent coming in at some point. The Nets, the two most now with Mikal Bridges not on the team, you're a Nets fan. I think the two most famous Nets figures are Ian Eagle and you. And I've had them both on the podcast, which is very exciting. You got to be so happy. They got a direction. They got a million picks. They finally picked a lane. Are you thrilled here with this decision to rebuild and what they got back for Bridges?
Yeah, over the moon. This was something I was kind of banging the desk for back at the deadline, and I thought they really wasted an opportunity, and then the bottom fell out the second half of the year. Now the opportunity came around again, and I'm all for it. And I'm also, as a Nets fan, I hate the Knicks. Some Nets fans don't care. I personally hate the Knicks. I have no issue trading Mikal Bridges to the Knicks because while Bridges was miscast as a one on the Nets, I still wonder what is his highest ceiling. The guy hasn't made an All-Star game. He has been at his best, the third best player on a championship caliber team. I think the Knicks need him to still be like a two. OG Anunoby is really good, but in terms of offensive creation, Bridges still needs to be that important. So I'm fine trading him. I'm fine trading him to the Knicks and, getting those two picks back from Houston. Obviously, the trades, they weren't tied together, but they were simultaneous. Like they all happened, like they were all tied together, not necessarily one big transaction. But getting back these two picks now, they're allowed to be terrible the next 2 years. It's a loaded draft next year, and the year after that, Cam Boozer is in the draft. So there's a real opportunity for the Nets, even if they don't pick one, pick in the top three, get one of the Rutgers kids, and then the following year also probably pick at the top of the draft. And very quickly, the Nets now have, I believe it's like the third most draft picks in the next 7 years. So this is a real runway to have a real rebuild. And again, I think in this new NBA, you need to start thinking of how to build your team almost like how NFL teams operate, like where you need to pounce on the rookie contract. And you still need stars, but in order to hold on to certain players and your assets, you need to hit on the rookie guys and you need to hit on your draft picks. So the Nets go into this likely picking at the top of the draft the next 2 years, control of those guys for like 7, 8 years, and a lot of draft picks to deploy to build around, hopefully. Cooper Flagg, hopefully the Nets are picking at the top of the draft next year and they get Flagg.
College football. You're as good as anyone when it comes to college football. It's not that far away as we're in July, 6, 7 weeks or so. I guess I'll ask it this way. Who one team you think is completely overrated right now, one team you think is underrated?
Ooh, okay. Overrated, underrated. Okay, I'll do. I just, so this is going to come out next week, but I just recorded my Big 12 preview. So make sure you're checking that out next week. But that's like top of mind right now. So Kansas State, everybody loves Kansas State, right? They're really disciplined, stout defense. They have their highest rated quarterback recruit ever now taking over in Avery Johnson. I think the win total is a little too high, Will. At 9.5, it's shaded towards the under. It's about -145. I still think that this team, though, might be a little closer to like 8-9 rather than like need to get to 10 to have a successful season in the eyes of odds makers. There's just a few questions. They lose their OC, Colin Klein. Johnson really was only used in gadget plays last year, so he's not like a proven passer just yet. More of a running quarterback first. Maybe it doesn't come together that much. And this is like the highest rating you're going to see on Kansas State in the last, I don't know, like 10 years. So that's usually a sign for me to maybe play back against them. So I'll say Kansas State, who is the second choice to win the Big 12. The Big 12, you could talk yourself into like seven teams winning the Big 12 this year. That's how crowded this new look conference is. Kansas State seen as the favorite. I just think there's a little too many questions. So I'll say Kansas State is overrated relative to expectation.
How about an underrated team?
Underrated team, Tennessee. Does that count as underrated? They're going to
Sure.
be ranked. I just think the defensive line is nasty. The offense, I think you got to go back to 2 years ago with how Tennessee looked with a healthy Hendon Hooker to really get an idea of how efficient this Josh Heupel offense can be with a true quarterback, a talented quarterback playing quarterback. And that, yeah, that's a shot at Joe Milton last year. Nico, I'm going to butcher his name. I got to get better at, but I'm a Valeva. He's a five-star recruit. He has a big arm. I think he'll run this offense perfectly. And Tennessee, the defensive strides is really what's going to make this team go and really be in the college football playoff picture, in my opinion. This defense usually has been a seed, but James Pierce Jr., guy was an all-SEC first team last year. I think they could take a serious step forward. This guy's going to be like a top 10 draft pick next year, maybe even top five. So Tennessee, to me, is a team that, you look at your SEC title odds. I know Ole Miss has a lot of love. I think Tennessee might actually be the team that competes with the Georgias and the Texases of the world in the SEC this year.
What's the number on Tennessee? I don't have these in Connecticut for SEC.
So they are, just because I'm looking at, I have it in front of me, they are, and I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship, but they're 33-1 to win the national championship, to win the SEC. They are 15-1. And I
Ooh.
just, so relative, they are the fifth, they're six, sorry, in terms of odds. They're behind Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU. I think you could argue that Tennessee is closer to Ole Miss at 7-1 than they are to Texas A&M, who's also 15-1, if that makes sense. Like, I think Tennessee, they're in like that third group. They should be in that second group, in my opinion. They're being a little slept on.
And we've gotten rid of SEC East, SEC West, right? Is that true?
Yes,
Okay.
divisions are out, so it's open season. I'm pretty sure, at least.
How
So,
has your brain adjusted to these new teams, new conference? It's very strange. Even looking at the odds, I forget what I was looking at the other day, and it was SMU is in the ACC. Like, especially when I feel like it works against you, and you're, I think, a little younger than me, but when you're older and you just, these things, like the back of your hand, these conferences, okay, you get a few changes here and there. It's not like they've been the same. They've been static for 30 years, but you pretty much know the conferences, the teams. Now it's just, man, the snow globe has been shaken, and it's hard to keep track of who's where.
It's going to be an interesting year. Obviously, you have the expanded playoff, but also keep an eye on these new teams joining new conferences, because there's a lot of familiarity when you're used to, let's just Tennessee as example. And every team that's playing Tennessee, there's a familiarity where the coaches all know each other and the schemes are all familiar year over year. You kind of have an idea. Now, you look at Texas, who's used to scheming for these Big 12 teams. Texas needs to come in, and I know Sarkisian has some SEC background, but they need to kind of change their weekly schedule to play catch up, because they're not used to playing these teams. And you can say the same about a lot of teams traveling or changing to new conferences in the Big 10, also in the Big 12, a few new ACC teams. So I think it's interesting how these new teams are going to operate in new conferences, because I do think maybe there's some downside risks to some of these new teams. Think like, obviously Texas, but also like Utah, who's the favorite to win the Big 12.
Who's your national champion?
Probably Georgia. Tough to go against them. But I will say, I think I am higher on Oregon than I am Ohio State.
Oh.
I know those two teams are kind of lumped together. I personally prefer the Ducks relative to Ohio State when the season gets
Is it
underway.
because of the quarterback?
I think Dylan Gabriel is very, very live to win the Heisman, but I also think the offensive floor for Oregon is higher than Ohio State's this year.
I meant the Ohio State quarterback. Is that why you're a little downer on them? More down
Yeah,
on
I
them?
think Ohio State's defense is nasty, but I don't know if Ohio State really solved some of their offensive issues because maybe you think Will Howard's an upgrade over Kyle McCord, but while Ohio State always has receivers, they did lose Marvin Harrison Jr., which is going to hurt any offense. Oregon, to me, I see pretty much no difference between Bo Nix and Dylan Gabriel. So I think Oregon, they made some big adjustments on defense as well, especially in the transfer portal in the secondary. So I think Oregon, to me, I personally think Oregon, Georgia is like a national championship matchup, in my opinion.
And it's basically, I've heard people make the case, hey, it's you could bet these other teams, but it's really those three teams that can win: Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon. Anyone other than that, you're kind of throwing your money away. Would you agree with that, or that's too narrow?
Texas, maybe. I do think it's interesting how this playoff is gonna how the playoffs are gonna go just with the expansion. I would throw Texas in there. I'm not betting on it, but I think Texas belongs in there. But after that, you're probably not getting the true number of the likelihood that you're gonna get. Like, I mean, Alabama 15-1, you probably need closer to like 25, 30-1 to really bet them. I don't think you're really getting much. So I agree that most of the win equity is baked into those three teams, and you could throw Texas in there as well.
Last one before I let you go, Heisman. Anyone worth a bet? I feel like they've taken the fun out of this a little bit. All the numbers that guys you want to bet, like there's no real sleepers. And I talked about this with Brad Powers last week. There's no sleepers at like 80-1, 100-1 anymore. You know, Joe Burrow was 200-1 and won this award. You're not getting that in this day and age with betting becoming just more legal, more discussed. But that being said, anyone you're eyeing, anyone worth a bet?
Tough to really get excited. I am curious how the new schedule and the new conferences do maybe impact the race for the Heisman. Like, does success matter as much given that teams might be dropping two games a little bit more frequently than the typical winners? To me, though, when I look at the top, I'm high on Oregon, as you could tell, but you look at if you were to compare like Bo Nix to Dylan Gabriel and their stat profile last year, they're pretty much the same thing. You wouldn't notice a difference. So I think Dylan Gabriel could drop into this offense and really thrive. The team went out and got Evan Stewart from Texas A&M at wide receiver. I don't really see much of a drop off, you know, from Troy Franklin to him. Sure, they lose Bucky Irving, but James is a more than capable running back. Gabriel, dual threat. I mean, look, Bo Nix was a Heisman finalist last year. Maybe if they don't lose two games as favorites to Washington, he does win the award. So I think Oregon can have a really big year, and I think Gabriel can end up rising to the top here in the Heisman race. So at price, he's about like 10-1 I'm looking at. I think Gabriel is a decent look for the Heisman. I do think it's going to be a little concentrated around the top of the odds board for sure, though.
Reed, you're the best man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Reed Wallach, podcast, wherever you listen to them, The Early Read, and you can find all my work at SI Betting. College football stuff is ramping up in the next few weeks. So plenty of conference previews going to be littered there starting in the middle of July.
Reed, enjoy the rest of your summer. Hopefully, we'll do this again soon. Appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that will do it. Thank you to Reed Wallach. Appreciate you guys listening. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Friday.